I'm Jamie.
And I'm Beth. Welcome to Thief Steals the Podcast.
Where I steal the podcast.
And I steal it back.
Okie dokies. Today, we are talking about the 9th episode of the 5th season, The Rundown Job. Beth, what did you think?
I would like to start this episode a little differently.
Okay.
I would like to start with my rating.
Okay.
And then we can chat about it.
Okay.
For a little bit of behind the podcast curtain content, Jamie said to me before I'd watched the episode, she said, look, this one can be a little divisive. And she told me that her take was a bit of a hot take. And I didn't know necessarily if her hot take was that she liked it or if her hot take was that she disliked it. And so watching the episode, I was concerned that maybe we might disagree. My hot take is that I don't think this counts as leverage, and I have rated it as such. This episode to me, similarly to like the Ho 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 Job and how I said that felt too crack ficky, I'm like, it's leverage technically, but I count it as like leverage adjacent. Like it's sort of like, it goes a step too far in a direction. For me, this feels the same. And I have given it a 2.5.
Okay.
Because number one, I didn't love it.
Mm-hmm.
But number two, the reason that I didn't love it was because to me, this was not an episode of leverage. This was leverage adjacent and therefore is not actually comparable to the rest of leverage. So I've given it an exact middle rating.
Okay.
Because I feel like I actually can't physically put it on the scale accurately.
Okay. With that as your opening, what I will say, because I want to put it at the start of the episode for anyone listening, I do have a hot take on this episode. The hot take is this is probably one of my least favorite episodes of Leverage. I will be outlining why. It is not just because I want to be contrarian or anything like that. I think what Beth said about it not feeling like Leverage 100% is a very big contributing...
Oh, thank God. Okay, so we agree.
is a very big contributing factor as to why I don't love this episode. I will say, though, I do understand why a lot of people love this episode. And I will say there are some absolutely top tier moments in this episode that I can understand that if leverage for you is about that thing, why that would contribute to making this like your favorite episode. For me personally, that's not why I watch Leverage. So it just doesn't outweigh the fact that I think this, I think just it doesn't inherently feel like leverage.
Thank God.
A lot of my...
I was really worried that you loved the episode. I was going to come here and tear it to shreds. Okay.
No. Cool. So if you love this episode and you don't want to hear us explain why we didn't love this episode for the next 40 odd minutes, feel free to skip this one. We won't judge you. We won't go right ahead. We're not interested in bashing this episode. We're not interested in being dickheads for the sake of being dickheads. Like we do that all the time, but not about this.
To be fair, as someone outside the fandom, I am not 100% like with it in terms of like how hot of a take our takes in not loving the episode are. I'm surprised this by how much you are caveating right now. So I don't know if like, I don't know how hot of a take this
is. Okay, so this is a hot take and I'll explain this to you and I'll probably leave this in for anyone else who just likes this podcast, doesn't engage a lot in fandom. This episode is one of the highest rated episodes of Leverage of all time. It's in the top 10. Yes.
That's shocking to me.
This is a beloved episode of Leverage. And you compared it earlier to the Ho 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 Job. I will say, yes, you're right. The Ho 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 Job also doesn't really feel like Leverage.
Yeah.
But it feels
more like Leverage than this.
I prefer the Ho 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 Job just personally because I think it's also fun. This feels like one of the things I love about Leverage is that they do really like to change the genre. They like to lean into the bit. They like to do it. I don't think this is a genre that Leverage should have leaned into personally.
Yeah. I have a very similar feeling to what you just kind of outlined. So the thing that primarily my notes, and I'll show you now, like I took a fair few notes. It wasn't like I wasn't paying attention.
No.
I took a few notes. I want to say at least a third of these are variations of what is this energy? Why does Leverage feel like an action movie right now? Everyone feels OOC. Like, that's half of my notes.
Yeah.
And that's why I was like, I was watching it and I was literally confused. And like, a little bit more context. We also haven't been recording the last few weeks, just like, you know, life.
Yeah.
And we took a bit of a break for probably about the last 4 to 6 weeks, honestly. We haven't done anything for either pod. And so this was my first episode back after like a month and a half of not watching it. And I was like ready to sink back into Leverage.
Mm-hmm.
I was really excited. I knew exactly what to expect. I was like, yeah, Leverage is really consistent. It's going to be a bit of a fun, campy time. There's probably going to be a, like, a, you know, a silly hat or an accent that I get to make fun of, and there'll be some like cute little moments and there'll be some funny moments, and overall there'll be like a bad person and we'll talk about it. I was so confused with this episode. I could not understand the energy. And I was like, this is not the leverage that I have come to enjoy. This is something else. And I think like the reason I compared it to the Ho-Ho-Jo was, like I said before, was because I feel like that episode also doesn't feel like leverage.
Yeah.
The difference with the Ho-Ho-Ho job for me was that it felt like fanfic in the sense that it was like crack. Like it was like leverage turned up to 11.
Yeah. There was still leverage. It was still, the characters were still the same. Just the concept was wild and the execution was wild.
And they had a lot of like returning guest cast members and things. So like there were lots of different elements at play. And it was just like, it was all a bit much for me. Yeah. This episode, you often say that one of the things you dislike about Supernatural is that it takes itself too seriously.
Yeah.
This is what that felt like. I felt, I was like, this feels like leverage going in the direction of like a procedural, like NCIS or like, you know, I was like, this is not the show. Like if the Ho-Ho-Ho job is leverage turned up to 11, this is leverage fed through Marvel. Yes. And it's just
from weird. A show that consistently says ACAB, except for like this one dude that we want to help us catch, like to be able to funnel people to. Like, in a show that pretty consistently says ACAB and that, like, protections in place, especially governmental protections in place for vulnerable populations is a good thing, for them to be, like, so wildly swing to the other side of, oh, they're going to help this, like, corporal or whatever. That's a loose cannon and doesn't care what
they play by the rules.
And, oh, but, you know, government agencies are so bogged down in legislature and blah, blah, blah. It feels inherently wrong for them to have an episode like this where they're like, oh, well, now essentially they're just going to be the police. But they're still technically criminals, but they're the police now, essentially.
Like, I didn't get that kind of vibe. The thing that bothered me, I think, about that was, and to be fair, this is like, if, like I said before, if this happened in Supernatural and they were like, oh, it's a cop who doesn't play by the rules, I'd be like, yeah, okay, that makes sense for what Supernatural is as a show. It makes sense for the thematics, you know, it makes sense for whatever. For leverage, though, it doesn't. And, like, the issue that I took with it was that they were like, yeah, they pointed out, like, oh, like, the government is too slow to take action, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I agree in some circumstances. Like, obviously, there are some limitations of having to go through all of the red tape. However, there are reasons and very good reasons why the red tape exists. Because you cannot be making snap judgments. It's like, was it a quote, I think, from a relatively recent episode where, like, we don't get paid to think or whatever. Yes, and it was from, like, yes, you do.
That's from the radio job, which is the second to last episode of last season.
Exactly. And so I was like, it's weird because like that guy in that instance, very clearly set up to be a villain. Like he was an antagonist. And then in this episode, it's essentially the same thought process.
Yes.
Yet.
Or at least like, I would say that that character was not set up to be a villain, but he was set up to be like the bumbling fool. Like he was set up to be played. Uh-huh. Like he was set up to be kind of a bit of an idiot. Like he's just like an idiot cop who they play using Elliot to make him fool for like.
Yeah. And it just, something about the fact that there are so many reasons why for me this didn't feel like an episode of leverage. The thematics, which we've just kind of like gone over, is definitely one aspect. But honestly, the thing that stood out to me the most is, number one, did it weirdly feel like they had a higher budget for this episode? Like,
I wouldn't. Here's the thing. Like, I actually think that it felt real cheap. Like, it just feels like normally leverage is so good and so clever that for this week, for it to be kind of dumb. Like, honestly, like, I think this plot line is just dumb, generally speaking.
Yeah.
Like, I think, I will say, I do respect the fact that they had it be subversion and they were like, they didn't just go the straight, oh, it's a terrorist, you know, an Arab terrorist route. I do respect that. But it's also like, it just feels like a cheap, it feels like cheap writing to me. It feels like you could walk into literally any big budget blockbuster.
Well, this is my thing. And
watch the same movie, but
it felt like watching Marvel or watching DC. And that was my point, I think. Yeah. More than, I don't necessarily think they had a bigger budget, but they presented as though they were a different style of production. Yeah. And I couldn't relate to it. And I also think that it negatively impacted the characters, because I felt like literally all of them were OOC. Like, lines mm-hmm. that Parker gave, I was like, I feel like Beth Rysegraff is, who I adore, mm-hmm. do not get me wrong, I feel like she is delivering them differently. I felt like Parker felt like a different character. The outrageous sexual flirting with Hardison this episode, in front of Elliot, no less, I was like, this is not something we have ever seen before. And I hope we've, like, not that there's anything wrong with, like, being overtly, like, flirty or whatever with your partner. Like, I don't take issue with, like, you know, sexist shouldn't be taboo, la, la, la. But, like, it doesn't make sense for this character. It doesn't really make sense just generally, because it's also contextual. Like, they are in the middle of trying to disable a fucking bomb, and she's like, okay, like, I understand, like, she's using him so that they don't change the pressure plate, whatever. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's like, the way they shot it was just, like...
Mm-hmm. Which brings me to my biggest issue with this episode.
Yeah.
As a Parker stan, I hate the way they treat Parker in this episode.
Yeah.
And that comes down to both Parker's, like, lines and what Parker gets to do in this episode. Because, you know, I think there are some really, like, A+, like, you know, that is my girl Parker sort of moments. Like, stealing the diamond to be able to use it later, iconic.
Yeah, makes sense.
Stealing the bomb to be able to light it on fire. So in character.
Yeah, but throwing herself into the thick of it. Yeah, absolutely.
Throwing herself into the thick of it. But some of it is just so dumb. Like, I understand that they wanted to give Beth Rysegraff this moment to have, like, the cool she's on top of the train sort of thing.
Oh my God, that annoyed me so much. However,
it would have been easier for Parker to get in the train than it would have been for her to get on the train.
Yeah.
So, like, it just doesn't make sense thematically or storage-wise. Like,
and also, it just added, like, for me, like... the whole thing where she was, like, dangling off the side of the train and she, like, nearly dies. I was like, we already had so much tension.
Yeah.
You did not need to add a layer of tension. And this is silly. It was unnecessary, which is one thing that I was like, yeah, because Parker wouldn't do more effort for no reason. Like, she's going to just get on the train. If she had time to get on top of the train, she had time to get in the train.
Yeah.
And, like, I just don't. It's another one for me. And, like, this is, like, a thing that I've said a couple of times. And so people will know, like, this is something that I personally take issue with. It's not, like, necessarily a comment on, like, the media. It's more, like, my preferences. But I'm, like, I get to a point where I'm, like, my belief is no longer suspended.
Yeah.
Her clutching onto the side of the fucking subway train and, like, nearly getting killed by the bloody thing sticking out of the wall. My belief is no longer suspended. She's dead. Parker... yeah. All intents and purposes, is dead. If this episode is canon, the rest of the show is actually her hallucinating in the last few seconds before her brain gives out. Mm. Because she's dead now, to me. And, like, also, the fucking moving laser thing. I'm sorry. I said it the first time she did it, I will say it again. Belief no longer suspended. And also, she didn't have her hair up.
That is what I will say. At least previously, when we've seen moving lasers, her hair... has been up.
Yeah.
Her hair has been tied in some sort of way so that it's not just flopping all over the place.
And Parker is, above all else, practical.
And they knew they were breaking into the safe. So this brings me to my massive issue with this episode. The sexualization of Parker is unfucking real.
Yeah.
It is constant. It is unwavering.
It's unrelenting.
And it also just, it's not even Parker or the way Parker's written and shot. It's about how the other characters react to her. What the fuck is that, like, weird fist bumpy thing between Elliot and Hardison when she's flipping? They do not do that. They have seen her flip through lasers how many goddamn times? They're not doing this. This is just fucking weirdly pervy for no reason.
Yeah, especially because, like, as characters, not only is, like, Hardison, like, her romantic partner and should have more respect for her than that, but also, like, Elliot is her friend.
Yeah.
Like, it's just weird. I feel like the closest we have had to this was, like, in season 1 when they get changed in the elevator.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, even then it was just, like, a side-eye kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, like, this was, like, so unnecessary. And, again, like, there was, like, the intense flirting before the flipping and, like, all of this stuff. And, like, they kept trying to do that thing where she was like, I don't believe in, like, luck or whatever. And they did it, like, the 3 points through the episode. Yeah. And I was like, this feels... Everything with Partisan has always felt so natural and so effortless and, like, so, like... sweet and, like, genuine, and this just felt clunky and out of character. The whole thing felt out of character. And even, like, Hardison at the end, like, rushing to her and being like, I can't lose you, like, whatever. Like, making about him.
Yeah.
Like, and one of the things that I have said from the fucking get-go about their, like, relationship dynamic that I love is that in moments when she is vulnerable and when she is struggling, he doesn't make it about him and he doesn't make it about his own emotions. Mm-hmm. He specifically is checking in on her. And, like, obviously, he has a right to be emotional in this yes. moment. The woman he loved nearly just died. I get it. But also, like, it just seems bizarre to me that this has been a constant for them for 5 seasons now. And all of a sudden, in this one episode, on top of all the other random shit they did, they also did that. Like I said, like, a third of my notes are just questions like, why are they so out of character?
I will say the other thing that I really think is just so, from a Parker's perspective, that I just don't really like is we get this speech where they're first realizing that it's a hit assigned on someone when they've approached Elliot to try and do it. She's like, that's that thing that you don't do anymore. I'm like, that is the least Parker dialogue I've ever fucking heard.
I know.
Like, I'm like,
just point blank. It's not good dialogue.
It's like, bad.
Like, I'm sorry. Like, I don't mean to, not to disparage anyone in their craft.
Mm-hmm.
But that is just not good dialogue. Like, yeah. And I don't think that that's me being too harsh. Like, we've been doing this for a little while now. Yeah. And I don't think I have, at any point in Leverage, or honestly, at any point in Supernatural, heard a line that was that poor. Like, it's just, it's somehow, like, completely undersells the severity yeah. of the situation while also trying to maintain this weird mystique that is pointless because the audience knows Elliot's backstory.
Yeah.
Like, we're all fucking aware. I feel like just even her just being like, just asking, like, what do you want to do? Yeah. Or, like, it's your call kind of thing.
Or would even just being like, who was significant? That? Like,
yeah, just a genuine question. Would have been more significant because it then puts Elliot in a position of how much do I tell them? It puts Elliot in a position of like, okay, like I know these guys have my back, like, you know,
yeah.
all of these things. And it gives him the power. Her just like suddenly assuming the thing not only removes power from him, but also just results in this really clunky dynamic. And again, it's so weird because we're so used to them working so well as yeah. a team, and like Elliot has this stupid fucking monologue where he does this thing and I swear to God the camera has never been tighter on him or Hardison's faces, and he's like, you're the smartest man I know, blah, blah, blah. And he's doing the like whole like whatever, and I was like, I have never felt like their relationships were less genuine than in this moment.
Okay, so that is a fan favorite scene. So
I'm so sorry.
I will defend it.
I'm so sorry.
I do think it is really good for their dynamic to have like a canonical occurrence of him confirming what the audience already knows, which is that okay, they care valid. Deeply about each other. But what I will say is so fucking stupid is not 5 minutes earlier, we have Elliot trying to get both Hardison and Parker out of this situation, which is out of character straight up.
Mm.
But he's trying to get Parker and Hardison out of this situation. And then when Hardison's like, no, we exit out of this situation, he's like, oh no, I've got to get you to stay. It's like the flip flop is amazing. And that is from, oh, by the way, did you notice this is a new evolution of Elliot's hair?
I did. One of my first notes.
It's Elliot's floppy hair era.
I said, did Elliot get a haircut? I do like it.
Yeah.
That's probably my favorite thing about this episode. That and the fact that Parker was wearing that like black long sleeve shirt with like the cut mm-hmm. and like around the neck area, which was very cool, is very reminiscent of a character called Yor from Spy Family, which is an anime that I'm obsessed okay. with. And she's an assassin and I love her. And I was like, I love her shirt. It's giving mm-hmm. Yor. And they're the two things that I liked most about this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, actually, as a lie, there's a third thing that I really liked, which was when Parker said she'd drive the van and Elliot and Hardison were immediately like, where are the seatbelts? And then they were upset that there were no seatbelts. I was like, that is actually the most in character that any of you have been this entire episode. And it was my favorite scene.
There were just, I think this episode really falls flat just because there's no actual joy to the episode. Like, there is no humor. There's nothing really funny about
there's
it. Like, it's
humor,
just
humor, but it falls flat. And yeah. I think it's because the energy of this episode, it just, like I said, it feels like Marvel. It feels like procedural cop
yeah.
drama. Like, this episode of Leverage felt more like Bones to mm-hmm. the point where actually my first note when they're at the pig farm, where I was like, plot twist, this is where Nate's mother got killed with a pig stunning gun. And then I was like, that's not going to make sense to many people, but
that's like a weirdly niche reference. But it just, for me, it just, I feel like there are so many like points in this episode where I'm like, oh, this is the leverage I love. But then it's immediately reneged by something that's absolutely wildly out of character. Like, I think there is a lot of really good points in this episode. But for me, just something, even like the costuming this week, I think is off. Like, you mentioned Parker's costume. So good. She looks so good in it. But there are, if you actually look at Parker's costuming through it, it's all weirdly sexualized, which Parker's costuming is not. Just generally, blanket rule, they do not sexualize Parker in her costuming. But for some reason, this week...
Unless it's plot relevant. Yeah.
But they don't just sexualize Parker for no reason. But there's no reason for her to be in anything skin type or skimpy this week.
I think that the thing about costuming that stood out the most to me was that, number one, at one point they go back to the fucking crime scene. And Hardison points out this is a stupid plan. And I'm like, yeah, you're right, it is stupid. Anyway, they go back to the crime scene. And he goes to the huge effort of putting on a pair of glasses. Not even sunglasses, just fucking normal glasses. And I can't even remember what Elliot did.
He has a beanie,
that's right. I'm like, oh, wow, you're basically a different fucking person. What are you doing? What do you mean? This is less effective than Nate and his stupid hats. I do not understand. Like, there is no fucking reason they couldn't have found something more creative. They have done it a million times before. And also, the only time Elliot takes off his jacket this entire episode is right when he gets shot. I'm like, oh, okay, so he took off his jacket so you can see the bullet wound. Cool. That's the reasoning. That's it. I'm like, and I don't even know if that's really a complaint. It was just something that to me, I was like, everything about this episode feels... It feels like no one cares. Like, one thing I feel like I can say about Leverage is, like, every episode, I'm like, I can see that everyone involved in it, like, is having a lot of fun and, like, they're, you know, just vibing. And this episode, I'm like, I feel like everyone just kind of gave up. Like, I don't know if that's, you know, again, not to disparage anyone in their craft, but, like, what happened? Like, something was in the water on set that day and everyone just went, eh, whatever. Like, even Nadine was like, eh. He can just take off his jacket. I don't give a shit. Like,
for me, this episode is just from start to finish. I'm like, the vibes are wrong. The thing that I think is most emblematic of the vibes being wrong in this episode, though, as in like something that's really obvious on screen, is the Sherlock level graphics.
Yes.
When Hardison is trying to work something out. These are graphics that we have never seen up to this point. Up to this point, if we've seen graphics like that, it's because they've got him on like a screen and it's like the screen reflected back over him.
Yes.
It's not actually like, oh, his brain is working through it like this.
I'm so glad you brought that up because I literally have a note. Why is Hardison looking like BBC Sherlock with his little imaginary screen things all around him? Like, genuinely, I was looking at that and I could not figure out if I had just missed that he had like a glass panel in front of him or he was wearing some fucking new tech that allowed like Google Glass or whatever the fuck.
He's just got BBC Sherlock
graphics. That's just how his brain works now. I'm like, this is what I mean when I say it felt like Marvel or like some high budget fucking whatever, because
it just felt so insincere.
Yeah, and it like trivializes it.
As serious as this episode takes itself, it just feels insincere from start to finish.
Yeah.
I think is really the issue for me. Like, the rest of Leverage doesn't take itself really all that seriously.
Mm.
Like, it has a lot of fun with its concepts. It has a lot of fun with subverting expectations. It has a lot of fun with, like, characters and costuming and that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, like, it is so sincere. Like, as a show, it sincerely believes in what it's saying.
Yeah.
It sincerely believes that nobody should be able to take advantage of other people the way that the rich take advantage of the poor. Like, it sincerely believes that with everything about it. That is what it believes. But for some reason, this episode just feels so, like, insincere.
Yeah.
It just feels like they were like, oh, well, we got to make an episode of Leverage.
It's even, like, even down to the product placement. And, like, I know that's so silly, but they had a Corvette ad in the middle of this episode. And I have a note that's like, oh, that explains the weirdly high budget. Like, what do you mean Microsoft isn't present your in-house fucking ad this time? Like,
I was just waiting for all the NSA spy truck screens to show. But, like, also, like, that's the other thing. I think it also, like, it cheapens a lot of their skill sets. Like,
yes.
We have the whole speech, obviously, about Elliot's like, you're the smartest man I know. And I think, like, the fact that he, like, grabs Hardison in that moment is a really effective choice. But it goes from, like, oh, you're the smartest man I know. But instead of actually having you have to find out any of this information, we're just going to steal a spy truck full of a whole bunch of classified information. And that's fine, though, because we had one line about how it's a violation of our gross civil liberties. Like, but it's fine. We're still going to have the characters use this spy truck with objectively too much information about private citizens.
I mean, I guess that normally in, like, Hardison has a line, and it's a line I actually did quite like. There were a few lines sort of in a row that I thought were, like, quite fun.
Yeah.
I just didn't feel like they felt, it was really weird, like, hearing Elliot say it's a very distinctive watch in this episode. Because I was like, I love that line. I love that through line, but it feels misplaced here. Like, and, you know,
it's like the concept around it is great, but something about the delivery, about the way it's shot, about the context in which it is, it just doesn't work.
Exactly. And like Hardison has a line, the government has everything. It's disturbing. Hot, but disturbing. And I actually really liked that line. Yeah. I thought it was very fun. But again, the like everything surrounding it just felt off. And like, I think that normally an episode of Leverage like would maybe even just focus on that particular like the plot of the episode might actually just be around like the surveillance of the public and how that was not really like a great thing and like the ethics around that. And in this episode, it's like not even the B plot, it's like the C plot. It barely gets mentioned.
I think if instead of being like, somebody who was like, oh, I presented this terrorist situation and nobody took me seriously, if they had made it like a rogue NSA agent who had been using this and like, you know how there's this thing where sometimes firefighters will light fires so they can be the hero to go in and save the day.
Yeah.
If they had done that, but it was an NSA agent staging a terror attack so they could be a hero and save people from the terror attack, I think that would have been such a... It would have been
along the lines of the DB Cooper job.
It would have been such a more consistent, like, through line with the rest of the thematics of Leverage.
Mm.
But instead they were like, oh no, we're just basically going to have them doing what the police would do, but not the police because they're criminals. But we're just going to have them try to stop a terror attack because they're now a government agency and they really trust this one dude who seems to think that warrants aren't necessary.
Yeah, this is the thing. And actually, this brings me to a point that, and this is why I keep bringing up Marble. I know I've said it like four times and you're probably like, Capacity, why do you keep bringing this up? This is why. I realized about 30 minutes into the episode that the plot is essentially the plot of Captain America Civil War, where their whole thing was like, we should have the Avengers. And the other thing was like, the Avengers should have regulations. That's the plot. That's the plot. And I was like, that's literally what this episode is trying to do. Like, they're trying to be like, hey, the government isn't good enough. And then the government is being like, okay, sure, but your self-funded task force actually needs regulation. Yeah. Like, there is merit to both arguments in terms of, like, the practicalities of fighting crime. But you have to agree that you do need some regulations.
That you can't operate completely separate from any regulatory bodies.
Yeah, because like, you need to face repercussions.
There's the difference between vigilantes and, like, actual people who are trying to help. Like, it is so wild to me that Leverage decided that the... Like, because also the cop that we're meant to be on the side of is Elliot's friend, who we've actually seen before very briefly. I think it was at the start of the season or the start of last season. And they did like the, oh, well, where have you been while we've been laying low flashback thing. Mm. And we actually see him and Elliot working together. So he's actually a reoccurring character. Fun fact, he gets two lines previously, but he is a reoccurring character and he does come back. We're meant to be on his team, except... This dude is a dickhead.
Mm-hmm.
This dude is like, government regulation. Who needs that shit? Who needs to be held accountable for their actions?
Exactly. And I'm like, this is my point, I guess, I was just trying to make, which is like, yes, government procedures can be slow. And like, that is bad in some cases. Like, yes, sometimes you need to act quickly. But the thing is, like, priority cases, number one, will be pushed through. And number two, like, probably need to be the ones that you need to be thinking about. Like, you cannot just make rash decisions on a knee-jerk instinct because
guess what?
You may make it worse.
It's exactly what this dude did this week when he got the info of, oh, we think that the trailer's where he's got all of his notes, etc.
Yeah.
Knee-jerk reaction was to fly a bunch of people into there and then basically do a tactical assault unit to try and break in,
mm.
except... because they didn't think about it. They didn't think to check, maybe this is going to be booby-trapped by the highly sophisticated terrorists that were
after. To get a warrant.
No.
Like, it's... We need to get off this because we're just going to be like around and around and around. Can I move on to something else that I didn't like?
Absolutely. Sorry.
Amazing. Literally though, like Parker, did she taser his carotid artery?
Because, I don't know if it's the carotid, but it's certainly close to the carotid.
Because like that can't... I'm not a doctor. That can't be good. And like, I understand that like, you know, tasering in general is, you know, you'd want to avoid it if you can. But being tasered in the arm, the leg, the stomach, I would assume... is probably more preferable than being tasered in the head, neck, chest regions. Like...
Well, I mean, I guess that close to the head, it's like the electrical signal, like the electricity from the taser could interfere with the electrical signals of the brain. So...
I suppose it also comes down to like the intensity of the voltage. Mm. So there's a lot of like...
So it's a supernatural level taser and it's 10,000 volt.
I think it was 100,000.
100,000.
Oh god, like whatever the fuck it was too many volts. But the point is, I just feel like maybe she shouldn't have done that. I know she loves her taser, and like honestly, that was probably the most in-character thing she did all fucking episode, other than drive the van.
I don't know, stealing the diamond, like very in character. I think the fact though that entire scene is like they set that up for the drama. Like, I love it, but like the fact that they have like Elliot walk in the darkness and like I've started working with a hacker. Like, it is...
I know.
It is so fucking stupid and I love it. Like, give me more stupid stuff and leverage. That's what I want. I want this show to be kind of stupid.
The thing is, I kind of hated it because I feel like it's them trying to take themselves seriously. And I'm like, guys, this is a silly little fun show.
See, I thought that it just swung them over into stupid. You know what I mean? Like,
okay.
You know, like, obviously you're like, oh, it takes itself so seriously. Like, it's sort of stuck there. Whereas I'm like, it takes itself so seriously, it's swung back into stupid. You know what I mean?
Like, I'm literally sitting there like, I have notes saying like even the music is more intense and classical than usual. Like, I feel like Elliot and Hardison have lower voice registers this week. Like, I'm just like, what is happening? And also, we haven't even mentioned No Nate or Sophie.
No,
and I miss them,
but we don't even get a mention to them is kind of what gets me. Like,
they're just not fucking like, I know, you know, people who've listened for a while will know that like my streaming service has been known to skip the full first 10 minutes of an episode, and I just didn't notice until we started recording and Jamie was talking about things and I had no idea what she was saying.
Yeah.
And to the point where I came here this morning and I said, hey, am I crazy or did we literally not know where Nate and Sophie were this episode? Did I miss something? Like, did my streaming service fuck me over again? Because I do not know where they were and I don't know if I'm supposed to know where they were. Like, we just get nothing. And like, yet again, like, this is another episode that's just highlighting, like, how the team functions without specifically Nate, but obviously in this case also Sophie.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that furthers my thoughts on, like, you know, yada yada, Nate's going to retire, Sophie will probably retire with him, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, like, sure. But it was bizarre that there was no... Like, we have gotten more information about why Tackett isn't in an episode.
Yeah.
Than we did about why Nate and Sophie won in an episode.
Yeah. They've given us full explanations via McSweeten for why we don't see Taggart. But, like, they couldn't even just drop a single line, like...
As soon as they figured out that it was, like, terrorism, like, all one of them needed to do would have been, like, do you think we can reach Nate or Sophie?
Like,
and then the other be like, no, they're not going to be in range. They said they were going to be, like, in deep cover or whatever the fuck. Like... That's all we needed.
Or like, no, we promised them some time off. Like,
yeah, just anything to be like, hey, this is why we're not calling our most valuable assets right now.
Yeah. This is why we're deciding to take on a terrorist as a team of three rather than asking our other two members to come and join us.
Help.
Or even just help over the phone. And like,
yeah,
because like, what's the bit? Nate would have probably seen through the whole like fake terrorist plot immediately. Like, he would have been like, that makes no sense. And then, you know, like, it just, I try not to be too negative about this episode because I do understand that it is an episode that the fandom at large really genuinely loves.
Here's the thing. Media is subjective.
Mm-hmm.
We're allowed to not like a thing. It's like you're not liking stuff about Supernatural. I'm like, you know what? Do I agree with you? No, not always. But can I respect the fact that we have different opinions? Yeah, because it's art.
Mm.
Like, whatever you want to say, like, it is art and people are going to disagree. And like, you know, we said at the end, at the start of the episode, If anyone loves this episode, totally respect that for you. It's just like, I'm not going to sit here and talk about what I liked because that would be lying.
I will say the one thing that I do really regret is I have seen a bit of like behind the scenes content about this episode.
Mm.
And the one thing that I do think would have made this episode immediately better is in the scene at the end where like it's really dramatic and like Hardison and Parker, like she's just burnt the virus and like they have the kiss and blah, 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 blah. There is a take of that scene with Ellie in the background just yelling out, "Hey, I'm still here," because he's literally just been shot. And I think that would have immediately given it the levity that it needed to just change the tone a little bit away from that really serious tone. So I am kind of sad that we didn't actually get that. But there is genuinely a take where they just have Ellie in the background being like, "I'm still fucking here."
See, like, that's very fun and that feels way more like leverage that we know. But I wonder if like, because like I said, there were lines in this episode on moments that I really liked that felt like leverage, but they felt misplaced.
Yeah.
I wonder if that would have also felt misplaced within the broader scope of the episode. Because like for a moment, I'll take you through the bits that I were like, yeah, this is fun.
Yeah.
Right. So the line about you stole a Michelangelo with tinfoil and chewing gum, figure it out. Like, yeah,
great. To be fair, though, he says that line to both Parker and Hardison. That was just Parker. Hardison had very little to do with that other than that he fake made out with Parker a little bit so they could get past security.
Mm.
Like, that's all he did, essentially.
Yeah. So, like, I liked that line. I liked, you know, actually, one thing I did like is that we got to see Elliot's side of things a bit more, like the way that he deduced like that it was a sniper and like where they'd be and like then when he met him in the stairwell, like they had the slow motion, but I actually didn't mind the slow motion. I thought it was used sparingly enough that it remained effective.
I think the slow motion with the sniper is way more effective. I have a note here that was the slow-mo was giving season one, the graphics are giving Sherlock. That's about the first scene where they're breaking into the vault and he's knocking out the security guys, which it is a Castleman security vault. So that is a flashback to season one. That is a reference that is old.
Yeah.
They're the ones from the homecoming job when there was that company that stole a bunch of money from. So it's a throwback to like the second or third episode of the season, which is fun. I also do love the line, "not talking to you," when like Hardison's there and he's just chilling and he's like, you know, Elliot, and they're like, "what the fuck?" And he's like, "not talking to you." I love that. That is very in character, but then it's just.
Yeah. And then there was also where, you know, the guy who I can't fucking think of his name, but Elliot's friend that we're supposed to like, but we don't.
Vance, I think his name
is. Where he's like, "oh, he cracked the NSA when he was 12. And then Hardison goes, "what do they say about me? Hope they gave me a cool name." And I was like, yeah, okay. That's Hardison.
That's Hardison. Also, the fact that Parker is already asleep and also already out of her handcuffs, that's my girl Parker.
The out of the handcuffs, I think, yes, absolutely. The asleep thing, I only accept if she was using it to make them not realize she was slipping out of the handcuffs. 100%
is. I think she's like,
if she's fell asleep, she has narcolepsy. She should see a doctor.
I think it's a power move. I think she's like fake sleeping.
Mm. I think she, personally, my take is that she used it as a distraction to slip out of the handcuffs. They were more occupied with the fact that, is she fucking asleep right now? That they're not going to pay attention to what she's doing with her hands. And I also really liked the line, "which I know nothing about," because that would be treason and wrong. Like, yes, that's funny. That feels...
That is giving me season one episode run. I, of course, don't have copies. That would have been wrong of me.
Yeah, exactly. Like, or like, the as much as I hated the fucking beanie and glasses excuse, like Elliot and Hardison working together to get in the van felt like very like kind of normal and fun. Like, you know, the like characters that they were playing in that moment to get through. And like Hardison saying, "what are you going to do with your big punchy hands? Punch the screens."
Mm.
Yeah, like absolutely. The thing is, while I'm reading you the words that they said, I'm like, yes, this feels in character. This feels fun. This feels vibey. I think when you watch it, it doesn't feel like that.
Yeah.
Like, something about the delivery, something about the context, something around the setting or something. I genuinely cannot put my finger on, like, one particular thing where I'm like, yeah, that's the problem I have. I'm like, just something about the overall production and concept of this episode just does not feel genuine to leverage.
Yeah. Even, like, I really like the speech where it's like, no, for better or worse, we change together. Like, I think that is a really powerful moment. I just think it doesn't hit like it should because of the context.
I agree. I feel like, for me, that didn't feel like the vulnerable moment it should have.
Yeah.
It felt like a big motivational movie monologue. Did you know what it kind of felt like? You know when you watch, like, a general sort of show, like TV show or whatever. And then at some point they do like a movie.
Yeah.
And the movie like fits into canon, but, like, you don't need it to understand the rest of the show. And, like, honestly, like, it's fine, but, like, it's not the best thing.
It's fun if you just want more of the characters, but it's not actually anything that's going to add to your experience of the show in general.
Yeah, like, it's kind of like, because it's a movie, they make it so that you could watch it as a standalone, mm-hmm. and they also don't want you to have to watch it to finish watching the show. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's that weird middle ground. That's what this episode feels like. This feels like a leverage the movie, you know?
And I will say, though, there are other moments where it's like when Park is like, well, do you know why they'd bring a cooler full of ice to a heist? I do.
And then,
like,
that's great. And then, like, I don't know.
And then they go to the, like, the underground basement and they break open the fake wall with the fire extinguisher. And then she just drops it through.
I know.
I was like, why?
Also, I have a question.
Yeah.
So at this point, like, they found the lab. They found the influenza strain. And, like, to be fair, they're right. This is a very, very deadly strain of the flu. Mm-hmm. If you're not familiar with it, it's one of the biggest, like, killers that we have on record. It was horrifically nasty. And obviously, like, the timing of when it was spreading was also just not optimal.
We also get the context of, like, 50 million people back when the population was a fraction of what it is. Lower. Now we're looking at 150 million people to die from this. Like,
yes,
Hardison gives us the context of, like, this is fuck off bad.
It is not at all insignificant. And so, like, okay, yes, like, I get the threat.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that they know this. They know this when they tell the cop guy. And he knows this when he goes to the fucking, like, house that gets blown up, right?
No one's in a hazmat suit, bro.
That's my point. I'm like, my dude, nothing about this so far has suggested he is going to blow anything up or shoot you, yet you're all fucking wearing your bloody
Kevlar vests,
but no masks. Bro, you would be better off showing up everyone in gas masks than you would showing up with a fucking Kevlar.
Yeah.
Like, nothing about this case so far. And, like, yeah, hands up with a gun later and he does blow up the thing. But, like, nothing about the information they have at the time suggests that those things are going to happen. Like, sure, take a precaution, but there is no fucking reason why they shouldn't have been wearing, at the bare minimum,
at this point, face they're masks. Thinking they're dealing with a bioterrorist.
Yes.
Not, like, a standard, like, blow shit up sort of terrorist.
And honestly, this probably backs up the, like, fucking congressman's point about needing those governmental
checks and balances
because someone would have gone, hey, you need to be taking proper precautions for this biohazard.
Another equally egregious oversight in this episode: the train is full and yet he still has an entire seat for his bag. Like, how fuck off rude is that? Like, I understand that he's a terrorist.
I was like, there is no way this man has room to put down his fucking briefcase. Also, quick note, he kind of looks like Timothy Hutton, but, like, older. Was it just me? For a hot second, I was like, oh, this is Nate in an elaborate costume. Like, they've, like, used fucking prosthetics to age him or for some fucking reason.
I didn't think it looked like Nate at all.
Well, I guess.
Just personally.
We're not the same.
Yeah, your face blindness is stronger.
I
will say, though, Parker, like, going through and doing, like, the excuse me and, like, bumping into everybody's arms.
To check for, like,
if they'd been vaccinated. Genius level move. That is so good.
Very clever. My one question about that is, theoretically, the man vaccinated himself. So how is he reaching around? Like, theoretically, he's going to put it in his thigh, right? Like you do for a baby. Like, if babies have multiple vaccines, they don't all go in the one fucking spot. They do, like, arm, arm, leg, leg.
Pincushion method.
Yeah. So if I have a needle and I think to myself, yeah, I want to put this in me, I'm not reaching around my shoulder to do it because that's fucking uncomfortable. You cannot get a clear shot. You have to do either, like, into your forearm or into your thigh. Theoretically, you'd want to do the thigh. Mm. Right? Like, I'm not crazy, am I? What would your instinct be if you were going to give yourself an immunization?
I think I'd probably try to jab it in my arm.
Really?
Yes.
Just out of pure, like, you could do it.
Well, it just...
You could do it, but it's much harder than just doing your leg.
Immunizations just feel like they're meant to go in your arm, you know? Like, it's just the vibes.
I mean, yeah, but, like, I just, for me, I'm just like, I feel like...
To be fair, though, this
it's
is...
possible, but it's...
This is awkward. A highly educated man. Like, he's a doctor.
That doesn't make you more flexible.
No. I was actually going to argue for your argument, which is that if he knows that it's going to be just as effective in your leg as in your arm,
yeah,
he would do it in the arm. maybe if he wasn't like an actual doctor and he didn't know that, like, if he was like me, a bit dumb, and was like, vaccinations go in your arm, maybe then he would do it in his arm. But like, he's a doctor. He would know that it makes no difference if you do it in your arm or your thigh.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, like, depending on the immunized, like, depending on the shot you're using, like, if you're fucking using an anesthetic, like a local anesthetic, don't put it in your leg if you want it in your shoulder. Like, obviously. But like, if you're doing a flu shot, like, theoretically, like, it just makes more sense to do it in your arm because it's more easy access. Like, you don't want to have the doctor ask you to take your pants off to get a flu shot.
Like, generally speaking, the arm is way easier for another person to access to stab you.
Yeah, exactly. But like, to my knowledge, and hey, you know, I might not be aware of something, but to my knowledge, there shouldn't have been anything stopping him from just putting it in his fucking thigh. And to me, that just seems easier.
And what would be so funny is Parker, like, going around, like, whacking everyone's thighs.
But do you know what? And like, I understand, like, obviously the media shorthand.
Yeah.
And like, I'm probably being a little too critical in this sense because like, the point is that like, oh, it's an immunization. And the clever thing is like, oh, okay, no worries. So I will narrow it down by being like, who has a sore arm? Yeah. That actually does make, like, as a, like a narrative technique, I think it's clever because it's like one of those things where it is a jump that the audience can logically make on their own and they don't have to spoon feed it kind of thing. But it should be abundantly clear as soon as Parker starts tapping people without them having to devote dialogue to it.
Yeah.
It's just that I think it's silly because I'm like, who in their right mind is trying to reach around their own fucking body when they could just go down? You know, it just seems silly. Like, this man was clever enough to use eggs to create his own fucking,
like, to culture his own vaccine.
Yeah. And he should have thought about putting it in his leg.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, this episode, just for me, it's not it.
I think what is also very interesting about this episode, and, like, this is actually something that I do genuinely think is interesting, and it's commentary that I'm not sure they were trying to make. But very much like I said earlier, like, the plot is essentially Captain America Civil War. The moral theme appears to be, like, if you live long enough, you'll see yourself become the villain.
Yeah.
Because, like, that guy's, like, the bioterrorist whole shtick is that, like, he has been warning for years and years and years that this is a threat and no one is listening, no one is taking him seriously, and so he decides to take matters into his own hands by proving them, like, proving that he was right by doing the atrocity that he was concerned about.
But also, like, the thing is, it's like, but you've been saying this for years and years and years, and no one had thought to do the atrocity this way until you did it.
Yeah.
It's like,
to be fair, I don't necessarily think, like, this could be, like, he's been warning of, like, a COVID-like situation. Yeah. Not necessarily bioterrorism specifically, because I would argue that, like, we weren't prepared for COVID, but we absolutely should have been.
No, but he was specifically about bioterrorism.
It was specific?
Because that's what they said the symposium was about. So the you know, all of the people that he had assassinated before... Yeah,
was specific to.
Was specific to a bioterrorism symposium or bioterrorism conference that he went to, like, a couple of years ago with all of these other people, and they dismissed his ideas.
Yeah. So, yeah, my whole thing is that I feel like the moral is if you live long enough, you will see yourself become the villain.
Yeah.
Which is really fascinating in the context of leverage. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they kind of started as the bad guys and then they became the good guys, but then it's like, what lengths are you willing to go to achieve your means or, like, achieve your ends?
Yeah.
And then it becomes, like, do you circle back around and become the bad guys again? And, like, given the way that they're working with this dude who, like, it's very unclear if we're supposed to fucking like him, because the episode makes it like we are supposed to like him, but the rest of the show is like, you shouldn't.
If this character was in literally any other episode,
they'd be the antagonist.
They would, if they weren't the antagonist, they would certainly not be someone you were meant to approve of or root for.
Yeah.
Like, whether they're, like, the main villain of the week or not, they would not be someone that we are expecting the team to work with and or agree at least, with.
Yeah, or like, I suppose. Or
like, you know what I mean? Like, but they present him in such a way of, like, oh, well, Elliot trusts this dude because they used to be in the military together. And, yeah, everything that he's doing is kind of really morally dodgy for no reason. But, you know, you're still meant to like him anyway, like...
The funny thing is that, like, oh, yeah, we should trust him because Elliot used to work with him. Because we know how trustworthy all of Elliot's former co-workers have been.
But it remember was Elliot Moreau? Was in-
remember that whole fucking plot line and everyone who still works for Moreau? Remember that?
Even the dude that he meets in this episode where he's like, I don't do that anymore. Like, his old, like, person who would, you know, dish out the jobs and that, like, kind of the middleman between the person who wants somebody to die and the people who can make that person die. Like, the middleman dude is an old friend of Elliot's that we're not meant to trust. Whereas they're like, oh, it's an odd friend of Elliot's, but because it's from when Elliot was in the military and not when he was a hitter, it's fine.
It's different. Yeah, actually, that's a really good point. That's a really good point. Which,
this show is not one that inherently spouts out, we should trust systematic institutions and their desire to do good because they're easily corruptible.
And, like, to be fair, you could say the same thing. Like, we've been saying, like, you know, obviously, like, there's a reason why there's government regulation in law enforcement and yada, yada, yada. Like, the thing is, it's really difficult because, like you say, the institutions are corruptible. And especially when they are based in, like, I mean, let's be real, like, every legal system in, like, Western society, and I'll include Australia in that, even though we're technically not part of the West, like, is based in racism. Yep. Like, the entire legal system essentially is just based in racism. And then if you want to look at it further, classism and sexism. Like, that's the basis of all of it. And actually religion also, I'll chuck in there. So, like, it's the foundations aren't great, you know, and I'm not arguing that they are, but I think that, like, you still have to have at least some form of accountability, you know, like, there is a reason why we have these systems in place, because if we don't have accountability, then people with power can literally do whatever they want, and there is no chance of them being held for their actions. At least with some systems, like, yes, they may be corruptible, yes, you might find loopholes, but it does make it harder, and it does mean that there is a chance these people can be stopped. There is, you know, it is more difficult for people to navigate the systems. You have to look for the loopholes.
If you like, dissipate the concentration of power over 24 people instead of 2 people, it's a lot harder for 24 people to cooperate for long enough to do atrocities than it is for 2 people to cooperate for long enough to do atrocities. It's like, it's a hard one because this is such, like, it's a conversation that's really nuanced and, like,
yes,
we're not in a position to actually have the correct nuance.
Especially the space for that.
Especially considering this is a leverage rewatch podcast and we're not American. So it's just hard, but it's like, yeah, there is this level of, you want there to be checks and balances in place to try and reduce the amount of power any one person holds so that if the person who holds the power is a dickhead, they can't be a dickhead with a fuck ton of power. Yeah. So it's just like, you want to have those checks and balances in place, but also the, you know, they're inherently built on corrupt systems of power.
Yeah.
So it's hard, but it's also like, it's just wild that leverage is like, oh, but we should trust this one dude who holds enough authority to throw together crack teams who can just do whatever the fuck they want. And we just have to hope that this dude is a good dude.
I'm telling you, it's literally the Avengers. Like, it is literally, he is trying to create the Avengers.
The issue is, it's literally like Civil War, essentially. Like, the actual conversation, if they'd actually dealt with it like Civil War did and actually explored the themes of, like, how much oversight is too oversight? Like, at what point does oversight inherently make a team less
effective? Like, and at where does oversight become, like, inhibition of the good? Yeah.
At what point does oversight also mean that, you know, these people could be used in ways where it's a net negative rather than a positive?
Yeah.
But they don't explore that. That's not at all what this episode is about. That is the underlying discussion of this episode. But this episode is not about that. This episode is essentially Iron Man 2. Let's have a fake out terrorist.
Do you know what's really interesting? Is this almost feels like a backdoor pilot. It almost feels like a, like, and honestly, like, that might be the way to look at it for me, because I think that it would explain why the energy of this episode is so weird. It would explain why, like, Sophie and Nate didn't really have to be there. It would explain why we're getting so much about this character. It would explain why we get all of the, like, fucking background about, like, this crack team of, like, loose cannon, like, bloody FBI, whatever, agents. Yeah. Like, because if they were being set up to be a new spin-off show, all of that would suddenly make way more sense. I wouldn't like it anymore. No. But it would make way more sense than this just being an episode of Leverage, because it's just inherently, I don't think it is an episode of Leverage. It's an episode of something, but I don't think it's Leverage. It was 40 minutes of me just being relatively confused. And, like, sometimes I'll watch an episode of Leverage and I'll think to myself, oh man, that was really cool and really fun. I kind of want to rewatch it, but then I don't, because the point of the podcast is that it's my first time viewership and yada, yada, yada. And sometimes I watch an episode of Leverage and I think to myself, I'm so confused. I feel like maybe I didn't understand it. Maybe I need to rewatch it. And then I don't. And then I just ask you. This episode, I got halfway through it and I was like, I think I'm going to have to rewatch this episode because I'm just so, I must be missing something. Mm-hmm. This just does not feel like Leverage. And to the point where I was like, do I need to go back and rewatch the episode before to like see if there was any lead up that I've forgotten or like check that maybe I'm not misreading the vibes and I've just forgotten what Leverage is about over the last 6 weeks? You know, like, and then I was like, but the thing is, this is not an episode that I would even want to rewatch.
Also, last week was the broken wing job, which is the one where Parker's, like, essentially fighting off kidnappers alone, like, because she's stuck at home in
jail. Yeah, which, in and of itself, a very, very different version of Leverage, but still inherently felt like Leverage. Mm-hmm. This just doesn't.
No, it doesn't. And I will say, immediate redaction of what I said earlier, it is not like Iron Man 2. It's like Iron Man 3, where they have a fake terrorist. And that is my bad. I really should have checked my facts before I said them.
Wow, Jamie, you're going to get cancelled on Twitter.
So apologies. It is, so it should be dealing with the Civil War aspects, but instead it's like, oh, let's do an Iron Man 3 and have a terrorist that's trying to pretend to be a different sort of terrorist.
Yeah, but we'll foreshadow Civil War while we're at it.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, I just, this episode is a bit whack. As much as we've just spent basically the whole, I don't know how long we've been recording, the last little while.
The last hour or so.
Kind of just shit-talking this episode. I'm glad that we agree, because I was really worried that I was going to come into this and this was going to be, like, one of your favourite episodes. And genuinely, I was watching it and I was like, this, her hot take must be that she doesn't like it. It must be. Because I cannot imagine Jamie, who loves Leverage for it being campy and fun and silly and wholesome, this cannot be an episode she likes. Like,
look, I understand that my hot take in fandom is that I don't like it. I was very much trying very hard to not give you the indication that I don't like this episode, because I didn't want for you to go into this episode with the negativity of like, oh, well, Jamie doesn't like it. So if even Jamie doesn't like this episode of Leverage, I'm not going to like this episode of Leverage. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, so I think it's an interesting episode of Leverage, but I just think inherently the vibes are so far off for me that I just can't enjoy it as an episode of Leverage.
I, as much as I've said, like, especially recently, like, that I would happily, like, go back and rewatch episodes of Leverage, like, I honestly, excluding maybe the pilot, and actually, maybe I tell a lie, I think from season 2, or like maybe mid-season 1 onwards, yeah, I'd be pretty happy to do a rewatch, like a solid rewatch of Leverage. I think those first couple of episodes I wasn't in love with, although I might appreciate them more now going back to them.
I think season 1's kind of like, you could go through and just pick out a few episodes. Like, yeah, you don't necessarily have to do a whole season rewatch because they're still very much finding their footing. The tone's not quite there yet.
Yeah.
But like,
but I can tell you right now, I'd skip this one.
Yeah.
And it's not like, okay, for an example, like, Supernatural, right? Notoriously terrible episode for a variety of reasons. Bugs.
Yeah.
Okay. I still think that it is, you can watch it and take something from it.
Yeah.
Because of the character analysis you can pull from that particular episode. The fact that the rest of the episode is a pile of dog shit around it, you can still take something from it. This episode, I feel like it added nothing to the actual show, and I would just skip it.
For me, the characterization of this episode is off, and I don't like it. Like, I personally don't like it, and I understand that some people love the characterization in this episode. Some people really love it because it is a more, like, it is a more serious take on the characters, and it also...
That's what I didn't like. That's the thing I was like, it just... Yeah, sorry, go on.
Yeah, same fear. I personally don't like it, but I know some people really do love that it is a more serious take on the characters, and that it is an episode that does acknowledge how much these characters mean to each other. The speech between Hardison and Elliot, but he's like, you're the smartest man I know. And also the speech of like, we change together. Those are massively important moments for people who really want to see this character dynamic that we see on screen every week actually verbalized. Mm-hmm. For them, it's inherently rewarding. For me, the vibes around it are so rancid that I can't bring myself to rewatch for those like two moments alone.
Yeah. And I think those moments for me, they just didn't hit. Like, I understand their emotional value. If you enjoy the episode and, you know, this is just a fun time, I think that those emotional moments would be nice because, you know, emotional beats are always a good way to, like, break up the pacing of an episode and, like, you know, sort of slow it down for a minute and make you feel something. But for me, I was so confused and so kind of annoyed and, like, just uncomfortable almost watching it because, like I said before, like I knew exactly what I was expecting to come back into. I was thinking like, oh, I'm going to slip into a nice warm bath of leverage. And instead I put my leg in and like, it, you know that thing where you put your foot in water and it's like so cold that it feels like it's burning and you're like kind of confused for a second until you figure out, no, it's definitely cold, not hot. That's how I felt about this. And like the fact that I eventually figured out that it felt hot was still not comfortable.
Yeah.
It just was that at first I was like, wait, is this supposed to be cold? Like, you know, I think I got that wrong. You know my point. My point is that the temperature was confusing. I thought it was going to be nice and warm and it wasn't. It was weird, hot, cold. And so I just, those moments that were supposed to be very genuine and heartfelt and emotional for me, I was like, but these characters aren't real because they're not. And I'm kind of a bit particular. Like nowadays I basically exclusively, if I'm going to read fic, I'll read supernatural fic. That's just the way I roll. Before I was into supernatural, I was a Harry Potter fan and obviously fuck JK. But you know, at the time I was very much into my Harry Potter fan fiction, but I refused to read fan fiction that was written about Harry, Ron or Hermione. Mm-hmm. I would exclusively read about their parents or their children. And the reason for that was because I could not stand to read stories that were written about those characters because they were not the same as what JK had written.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I could not get into it. I couldn't get into that bath. It was too jarring.
Felt wrong.
Yes. And so I could read about their parents because JK never really wrote about their parents or from their perspectives. I could read about their children because of the same reason. I could not read about the characters themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so like when I'm reading or when I'm writing supernatural fic, I will stay so far away from tags about OOC because I know that I don't like it. And I'm not going to go where I don't want to be.
Mm.
This episode felt like I had wandered into a leverage fic that wasn't tagged as OOC. You know what I mean?
There's just something a little bit off about the characters in this dynamic. But the thing is, we've seen these three characters work together closely before. We've seen these three characters interact before. And they've never felt like this before. So it's really weird that this is the episode where they just suddenly feel different for some reason. But I do think we need to get off of it. I don't think I have anything else actually of value to add other than repeating the same 4 points we've made like a dozen times this week. Do you have anything else?
At least we're self-aware.
Do you have anything else new, fresh or exciting that you want to add?
The green Vespa is cute.
Mm-hmm.
That was fun. I had a note about how after there was like the active shooter sniper situation, they took the intended target to another very open location, which seemed like a poor tactical decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And obviously not very far away from the original
scene
of the intended crime. And then also I immediately picked that the like guy who arrested them was actually going to end up helping them like fake escape. Like I picked that insanely quickly. I didn't think it was particularly well veiled.
When they get arrested, because they basically go back to the scene of like they've kind of vaguely left and then come back. And then he calls his buddy or whatever and he's like blah, 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 blah. And then he meets his, it's like you could have told him that over the phone.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't need to go back and meet that. Like, you could have you could have listened to Parker and avoided getting arrested. If you'd literally just told him that on the phone.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Honestly, I'm like, there are so many things I didn't like about this episode that I'm willing to look over that. Because, like, there were so many things I liked even less. You know, and the only other note I have is that I liked the overalls of the guy who died at the start.
Yeah.
Oh,
I want to say poor pig farmer and piggies.
I have a note. Look, my note. That was going to be my last thing. Poor piggies. Aww, that's my note.
I think my note is literally poor piggies as well.
Aww.
Let me see if we match. I know.
We really share brain.
Yeah, poor piggies.
Poor piggies. Aww, look at this guy.
Let's go.
Yeah, I don't think that I have anything else I want to say. Oh, I had a note very early on, which was like, do I need to be taking note of the day numbers, like that's flashing across the screen?
Not really.
And then I was like, when I realized that they weren't relevant, I was like, I don't really understand the point of those.
I think they're for the genre of it all.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I don't like the genre of it all this week.
Yeah, honestly, I think that you're right when you said at the top of the episode, like, they're leaning into a genre. It just didn't pay off. And that's unfortunate, especially in the last season. And midway through the last season, you would want to be like, yeah, these are some of the better episodes. Like, yeah, we're putting our all into these. And honestly, that might be what it was. They might be like, hey, this is our last season. We're going to like...
Go home.
Let's chuck in all the ideas that we didn't think we would ever have time to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, let's just do it. And honestly, that might have been what it is. And unfortunately, it just hasn't, in our opinions, panned out for them.
Okay, well, I don't have anything else to add. Are you finally ready to wrap up the episode?
Yeah, although it's going to be a bit of a weird wrap up because I've already told you.
So you're standing by your 2.5 rating?
Yeah, nothing you've said has convinced me to give it anymore. And like, here's the thing.
I was thinking I might have convinced you to give it something less.
The thing is, I stand by what I said. I don't think I can rate it against the rest of Leverage because inherently this episode to me was not Leverage. Like, the only other rating I could give it would be nothing because it is not Leverage. So I think I have to me, I think I have to give it a 2.5 because I can't. The thing is, I don't think it's a bad episode of television. I think that production wise and whatever, like the acting was good, like whatever, like the plot was whatever. But I think if it was a procedural show, it would have been a perfectly fine episode. It's just that it is not a Leverage episode.
This is not what I came here for.
That's the kicker.
Yeah.
So 2.5, I can't give it higher because it's not Leverage, and I can't give it lower because it's not Leverage. Like, I can't compare it, so it just has to have a solid actual middle rating.
Okay, lovely. Next week's episode is called The Frame-Up Job. What do you think it's about?
I hope it's about something to do with art.
Okay. Yep. Anything else?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. The other like context for the word frame is that you could be framing someone, but that's literally what they do like almost every fucking episode of this show. So it feels weird that they would use that as a title for where like they're just going to frame someone.
Yeah.
I think it's most likely going to be like some kind of like art heist maybe, or like maybe there is a, what's the word when it's like a painting, but it's like a copy of the painting.
Like a forgery?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like that kind of thing. Some sort of fraud in like the art or the art history world, maybe. Okay.
Yep.
Or maybe it's going to be like a Banksy moment where like the painting gets shredded by a mechanism in the frame sort of thing. Like, I don't know. But I think it will probably be related to art, which means it will likely have Sophie in it, which will be nice because I miss her. I really noticed her missing from this episode. Although, honestly, part of me is curious as to what Nate and Sophie would have done this episode and if that would have helped with the vibe overall, like having the whole team.
It's like, are the vibes because Nate and Sophie weren't there, or is that just like a coincidence? Is it correlation or causation?
I honestly think it's probably just coincidence because I don't think, like, there are too many things with this episode for it to just be that Nate and Sophie are missing for, you know, for that to be the case. But I think it would have been interesting to see a version of this episode that does have them to see if it did anything to help.
Okay, lovely. Well, thank you so much for joining us this week. If you have made it to this point, thank you so much. So sorry if we just ragged on your favorite episode of Leverage for a solid hour. If you want to talk to us about anything, if you are a stan of this episode, I would highly encourage coming and talking to us and defending this episode.
Please don't be mean. Sorry. I don't know if we're inviting people to come and argue with us.
I was not thinking arguing. This is why I said defend the episode to us. Okay. Look, if you've made it this far, thank you so much. We know that this is a very popular episode of the show. Personally, it wasn't our cup of tea. But if it is one of your favorites, I would highly recommend come to the Discord. Come and defend this episode. Why do you like it? Because personally, I've just never seen
the merit.
The merit. Like, I can see moments in this episode that are like great moments of Leverage. Unfortunately, the packaging is just so distracting for me that I can't look past it.
Yeah.
So do you have a technique for looking past the fact that the packaging is just so unleveraged-like?
Or is there something about the packaging that you enjoy? Like, you know, we said, like, they lean into genre. Like, do you just like this style? Because I genuinely would be interested, and this is one of those things where it's like, media is subjective, and, like, everyone's going to have a different take. And I think, honestly, the best part about media consumption and this kind of, like, format of talking about it is you get to have a whole bunch of different opinions. So, yeah, it would be interesting to hear, like, if you loved this episode. Yeah, let us know why. Like
we understand that this was a pretty negative episode because neither me nor Beth are going to stand this episode.
I think it's the first time that that's happened for Leverage.
Well, here's the thing. I basically stand almost every other episode of Leverage.
Yeah.
Like, there are very few episodes of Leverage that I don't really enjoy that much. So most of the time, at least I'm positive, but unfortunately, I'm really sorry. I'm not.
You just couldn't.
This something about the vibes. Like, every other episode, I can be like, oh, that has, like, issues. But, like, it still feels like Leverage enough that I'm willing to defend it. This one just doesn't. And that's probably a me problem. So we would love you to come and defend it. But thank you so much for watching anyway. Please have a lovely evening, night, lunch, brunch, midnight, 2 a.m., 3 a.m., 4 a.m.? Is it 5 a.m. a thing?
Is 5 a.m. a thing? I'm... No, Jamie, in some countries, you skip straight from 4 a.m. to 6 a.m. and actually 5 a.m. doesn't exist as a concept.
That's what I thought. Bye!
Bye! Is 5 a.m. a thing? Fuck.